welcome to Books Unbound, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts, us. It's Ariel and
Raylene.
Hello.
So for you guys, it's been, this is the weekly update. The episodes have been coming out beautifully, if we do say so ourselves. But for us, it's been 2 weeks since we last recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And what this means is that we have a lot to say.
It's our time to talk.
So much has happened, including daylight savings, which I only bring up because the sun is in my eyes and there's nothing I can currently do about it. So together, if you're on the video version, the sun will slowly move and it should be fine soon. But yeah, if I'm kind of leaning over, that's why. We have a lot of fun stuff to talk about, Raylene. A lot of bookish commotion has gone down for us.
Yeah, we both did like booky things in the past week or so.
We had booky times. But let us begin with some very important news, which is that our Bookmark subscription club is currently open for subscribing. So this is one of our mainstay projects that we do throughout the year. We did it last year. We were so happy with how it went. We did it last year. It has gone wonderfully. And so we're doing it again next year. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, we have this quarterly Bookmark subscription where we team up with artists that we really, really like. We like spend weeks looking for artists, cool people, and then we reach out to them and they design two beautiful bookmarks for us. So you can only get the bookmarks through the subscription. They're not for sale individually afterwards.
Yeah.
So this is the only way to make sure that you get them. And they come out and they just get mailed to you 4 times a year. Every few months, you get these beautiful bookmarks and a set of, so you get the set of bookmarks, a sticker, actually you get two stickers, and a little video from us saying, you know, hola, this is a book we recommend you read with these bookmarks.
Yes.
So it's a cute little package. It's only, what is it, $11.50?
Yeah, $12? So. Something like that.
American, so whatever that is in your currency that you're listening. But like, it's really, honestly, surprisingly cheap, I think, for what you're getting. And it is such an amazing way to support the podcast, because that ongoing support, we are so grateful for. So it's projects like this that have led us like to continue investing in the podcast and doing video and stuff like that. So if you want to check it out, it's available now. And we just got, literally before we hit record, we just got some of the artwork from one of the artists and we were fanning over it.
It's so good.
I think that that might be like my favorite bookmark of all of the bookmarks.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
It's gonna be nice.
I said it.
High praise.
So if you want to check that out, you can check out the link in our show notes or in the description if you're on the video version. But it will also be linked on our Instagram. And you can just go to our website, booksunboundpodcast.com, and go, and there's a giant shop button.
Yep.
And you can just click that and it will take you to the shop. So there's lots of ways to get to that. But the thing about the subscription model is that this is the only time that you can sign up. Close on November 20th, and then they're closed for the whole year because of the way that we have to order everything. So do it now.
Do it now. And just so for people who might be wondering, if you're already signed up, you will still be subscribed to the club. So you don't have to like re-sign up.
Yes. Good catch, because we did get questions about that. You don't have to do anything. It'll just keep on going, which is great.
Yep.
All right. That is checked off of my list. Next thing that we have to talk about. I don't know if you remember this, Raylene. You sent me on a little mission. I actually sent myself on a little mission, actually, now that I think back on it. Last week, I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but it was the episode where we were rating things out of 10.
Yeah.
And we were talking about sprayed edges.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And you asked me, why do some older books only have like one edge sprayed?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? That's going to be like my book binding deep dive. Like, I'm going to try and figure out the answer for us. When I tell you that I spent hours of research on this, I went down, it was such a rabbit hole. Like, it was the rabbitiest hopping rabbit hole ever. It was so fascinating. I learned so much. I had so much fun, like, trying to figure out the end. I honestly felt like, did I just discover what I should do a PhD in? Because there's there's so much about the book history of it all that, like, goes into this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try and give you a truncated answer here because, okay. like I said, there's too much to go into. But I will say, I'll link to some of my favorite spots that I found, that little articles that I read where I was like, this is so fascinating. I'll link those down if you guys want to go down this rabbit hole with me. There's a lot of different reasons here. Okay. So the first thing that I'm so excited to tell you guys these things because it is fascinating. It all goes back. Sorry. I'm already going on a whole rant. It all goes back to, medieval books. Of course it does. So basically, I learned about how so many of our current expectations are not what people, not how books functioned a long time ago.
Yeah.
So let me actually, I'll pick up this random book here that I'm not even going to be talking about in this episode, but it's just the nearest biggish book to me. So, and I will explain this for our audio listeners. Obviously, we have the book spine.
Mm-hmm.
The pages that are exposed on the other side, the opposite side, the long side of pages.
Yeah.
I have learned is called the fore edge, F-O-R-E, the fore edge.
Okay.
The pages at the top section, that's the top edge, and then the bottom edge.
Okay, makes sense.
So when books were originally made, they didn't use the spines for information.
Oh.
Which we now put the title and the the author on there.
Yeah.
That was not a default thing.
That's weird.
And a bit of research that I did there was, I think that it was just a combination of A, the material that they used was not a material you would write on. But secondly, they just didn't have that many books. And so you didn't need to title them.
Yeah.
It's like, do you title your tables? No, you just know that table is that, right? You don't have that many because books were so rare. And so this concept of a title is a later establishment. The second thing I learned is that books were not kept on bookshelves with the spines out.
What on earth?
And they were not standing upright.
No.
They would be laying flat with the fore edge out.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So all of these reasons changed what their concept of doing stuff on the page edges was all about. And so one of the things that they do is that they would do fore edge paintings. They paint on the sides, and that would have been to help identify them, to make them more ornate, make them more beautiful. As time passes, the history of books is passing and books are becoming more and more. We're getting more books. They're making more books. A couple of things happen. Number one, because they had more, they did start standing them on their sides in order to cram more in.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, because they had more, they needed to identify them better. And so they started putting the title or the spine side out and they started putting titles and stuff there.
Yeah.
So that was one rabbit hole that I went down that I was like, this is so fascinating. The reason that this relates is because once books spun out, now the pages were just for fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And so fun stuff started happening there as well, like complicated paintings or invisible paintings, where you would when you fan the pages a certain way, a painting is exposed and it could become more ornate. So one of the things that started happening as well was gilding. They would obviously, or gilting or whatever, they would put gold foil on the edges.
Yeah.
And the reason for this was A, decoration, but B, to protect the pages from dust and from other mites and stuff like that. What's fascinating is it was in this conversion from a laying down book where it could have been dusted or there would have been wind to a time when the book now was standing upright and only the top edge was exposed that was the only one they really needed to protect from dust.
I see.
And so the thing happened where they started only spraying the top edge in order to protect it from dust. And then it just became a pretty thing that we did.
Yeah.
And we just did it for aesthetics.
Huh.
There you go, Raylene. That is what
I learned.
Thank
you. Thank you, Teacher Ariel. That's so nice.
Now we know. Was so fun. It was so fun to go down this rabbit hole. And when I tell you that I saw a million other things to mention and that I have simplified the hell out of that, and then I know there are going to be medievalists listening to this who are like, it wasn't exactly like that. You're right. It wasn't. It was, that's an approximation.
Yeah.
Of a lot of history of books. Okay. The final update that I needed to tell you about was that this is my new favorite pencil.
I was going to say, you and your pencil, you've been waving that thing around.
So I was reading a book and suddenly the idea of using colored pen to annotate seemed insane to me, which is so funny because that has been the default thing I've been doing for the last decade.
Yeah.
So I don't know why suddenly I was like, what the hell am I doing?
It needs to be
a pencil. Why would I do that? I was like, it needs to be a pencil. So I went into my parents' room because I knew my dad had pencils there. And so I took one of his pencils. And now I can't live without my pencil. This is my favorite pencil. I use it for pointing, enunciating, and for, of course, annotating. Annotating with a pencil, it's a completely different game. Completely different game. And I really like this game.
It's a good game.
Where did I get this pencil? I remember I bought a bunch of these for my dad for carpentry projects at Dollarama.
Oh.
So it is not a fancy pencil. It's just a great pencil.
I love it.
What's going on with you?
I mean, not much. I haven't discovered a new pencil or gone down any crazy rabbit holes, but in the past week, or I guess like week and a half, there was another book sale near me. So I went to that.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it was going on for a week. And I went to it twice because I went on the first day when it opened, like right when it opened, and it was mayhem. There were so many people and so many books and like so many books stacked underneath tables that it was just impossible to look at everything because it was so crazy. But I did manage to get a large stack of books, mostly not for myself, mostly their Christmas presents, which was, I found some really great books to give to my friends and family. So I'm really excited about that. But I did find a couple of books for myself. So when we get to the book haul portion, I can kind of talk about that.
I mean, maybe we should just transition into the book haul now.
Me as well. I mean, mine is, it's a pretty small haul. So I just found a couple of books, but very exciting books. So the first one I found was Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe by Fanny Flegg, which I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast or if we were just chatting about it. But
no, we did, because it was one of the ones I was going to get you for the I think it was for the 200th episode.
Right.
We were like, we had to get a book that had something to do with one of the episodes.
And
I picked that one. I wanted to pick that one because I was trying to find a book where old ladies talk on a porch, because that was like a dream we had in one of the episodes.
Yes.
When we're 80, we'll hang out and be on a porch. And that was the one I could find that was the closest to it.
Yeah.
But they weren't best friends. It was like one lady's older than the other one. So I ended up not grabbing it for that. But I still like really think it sounds great.
Yeah, it says on the back, it's the story of two women in the 1980s of gray-headed Mrs. Threadgood telling her life story to Evelyn, who is the sad slump of middle age.
A sad slump.
What was really fun about this too is that I actually found multiple copies of it. So I bought one for Ariel too. So that's a little spoiler to Christmas, but I had to ask you because I couldn't remember if you had it or not, or if you even wanted it. So that was a really good find. It's also about a cafe, which, as we know, like I love people talking about making food and stuff. So I'm hoping that'll be a big part of it. But anyway, so the only other book I actually got at the sale is Intensity by Dean Koontz, which is the randomest book of all time, I think, for me to have picked up, or at least on the surface, it seems totally random. But this is a book that I read a review for like a decade ago and decided I wanted to read it, but I just never like bought it and never really like dedicated myself to like, oh yeah, I'll actually read it soon or whatever. And then when I was at the book sale, I was just like, you know what? If they have it, I'll pick it up. Like, today's the day. I don't know. I just decided that today was the day. And so I did pick it up. And I'm actually reading it now, so I'll talk about that later. But this book is like a horror thriller. Never read a Dean Koontz book before, so I don't know. It's just totally random. But so I picked those up. But then I also got a call from my local bookstore that it had found a book for me, I'm assuming at the book sale, because they were also at the book sale. I saw them there. I know what they were up to. And they found for me Neuromancer by William Gibson, which is a book I don't know that much about, honestly, but it's like a sci-fi classic that has kind of shaped the genre a little bit. Like, it's one of those books that helped make sci-fi what it is today, and it's kind of more about like cyberspace and stuff like that, I think, but I really don't know that much about it. I want to go into it, not knowing too much. What was that?
Have you read the first line?
No, what's the first
line? It's incredible. It's incredible.
Let me read it to the class. The sky above the port was the color of television, tuned to a dead channel. Oh, that is good.
That's incredible. Good. I know!
That makes me extra excited to read this. Dang, that's good. That's real good. So those are the books that I got from the sale and my local used bookstore, but you and I were also sent a book by Bloomsbury that is very exciting that we can chat about quickly, and that is Welcome to the Hyunam-dong Bookshop by Hwang Bo-ryum. And this is so exciting. Not only is it just like a very, very beautiful cover, like this is an art that we got. This comes out in February of this upcoming year, but it fits into our vibe completely. So the main character is a woman, you know, she works a job and she's burnt out. She wants to escape her life of whatever job she's working, and she goes to work in a bookstore / buys a bookstore. I'm not really sure of all the details, but it just looks fantastic. And on the cover, it looks like it's like a nighttime bookshop. So I don't know if that's just for aesthetics or if that's the truth, but I feel like that would be really cool. And it's a South Korean book translated by, let's see who it's translated by. Oh, it's right here. Shanna Tan. Translated by Shanna Tan. So this is pretty exciting. I haven't read a book set in a bookshop in quite a long time because I'm very picky. Yeah, I'm quite picky about those. So I'm excited about this one.
Look how interesting this is. Shanna Tan, it says on the back, Shanna Tan is a Singaporean translator. It talks more about her life, but then it says she was mentored by Anton Her.
Oh.
He's like a really, I follow him on Instagram. He's like a really popular translator. He did Curse Bunny.
Yes. Like, I was like, the name sounds familiar for sure.
Yeah, he's done a lot of big, that's interesting that, like, he is such an established translator that if you are a mentoree of his, they'll put that in your bio.
Yeah, no kidding. That is awesome.
I'm also flipping through the chapters have titles, and one, the second chapter is called It's Okay to Stop Crying.
I love it. You know, it's funny. I've actually said this to people before. Like, in October is kind of like the time to read and watch scary movies. And I've said November is the month to cry. Like, I don't know why, but I feel like November is the sad month. Because, like, Christmas is all about joy and happiness. So I feel like you go from spooks to happiness. There's got to be something in between. And it's just like a sad, rainy, crying month. So that's perfect. Maybe I should read this book in November.
Raylene said that to me the other day. She was like, I just feel like November is time to cry. I was like, oh.
I love crying. I'm just saying. Just putting it out there. I think crying is very therapeutic. It feels nice.
It is nice.
Sometimes you just need to watch a movie that makes you weep. For me, a few years ago, that was Billy Elliot. Man, that movie really got me. Love that movie.
I do think that that is why I watch the F word so much, because it feels very melancholic to me, and like, it doesn't make me cry, but it does make me feel very emotional. Yeah. And then I'm like, emotions are good. That out of my system. Had to face my feelings.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, did you have another book?
Nope, no, that's it. I kept it pretty tight. We were gone for 2 weeks and I only accumulated 4 books. Considering how many books I bought as Christmas presents, though, it's pretty impressive. I think I bought like 12 books for other people. So I did a good job.
Well, you did much better than I did. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I accumulated 8 books.
That's not too bad. If you went to 5 bookstores, I would have. I thought it was going to be a little bit more than that. So I'm impressed.
It's not too bad. Hokey dokey. As you mentioned, I went to 5 bookshops. This was on Saturday.
You did it all in the same day?
Yeah, all of them were on the same day. Oh my God. So Connor, this is really fantastic. Connor has really started to lean into the mission with me. I think he wants me to accomplish my goal of visiting all of the bookshops in Nova Scotia this year. And so every time that we're like thinking about going out, he's like, what if we hit up another bookshop? And I'm like, this is the energy that I need.
Yes.
And so he asked, like, would you want to do some bookshops? And I was like, there are 4 bookshops in Dartmouth that we have to, that I need to hit up.
Yeah.
And they're all like within a few minutes driving of each other. Perfect. We could just do like all of the ones in Dartmouth. And he was like, that's a great idea. So we went to Dartmouth, which is the city across the harbor from Halifax.
Right.
And yeah, it's one of those situations where like, if you come here, it really does feel like it's, that's just one big city. Mm-hmm. Halifax, Dartmouth, it feels like it's one big city. They're connected by multiple bridges and highways, but somehow they're 2 different cities.
Okay.
And we went to Dartmouth, we had a really great lunch, and then we got to book shopping. What happened though, is that right next, and thank God, right next to where we had lunch at the canteen, if anyone is curious, but just next, like right next door to it was a bookshop that was not on my list.
Uh-oh.
And so we actually started there and it was called Friction Books.
Ooh, you got a tote bag.
And they gave me a tote bag.
Very nice.
Which I appreciated because we got a lot. We bought a bunch of books. That was the shop where we bought the most books. And
I really like the name too. Friction.
I know.
That's cool.
Friction, like fiction, but friction. Like, yeah. That's good.
It's
that's
neat.
Good stuff.
It's an unusual name for a bookstore, but I like it.
I liked it too. This was one of my favorite bookshops that I've been to all year. I really, really loved it. There was a couple of really cool things going on. So first of all, it isn't a full bookshop. It is in this cool little space that in the front third has a cafe. In one of the other thirds is a record shop and the other third is a bookshop.
Oh, that's cool. That's a cool vibe.
And I will post photos of these all on our website where I've been chronicling this whole adventure. But basically, it was really inspiring because it is hard to run a bookshop. I understand that. It's hard to run any shop.
Yeah.
But you want bookshops in rural communities or smaller communities. It's funny because Dartmouth is not a small community. It's a city. But it was really inspiring me to be like, yeah, you don't really need an entire bookshop, actually.
Yeah.
If you just have a couple of shelves with a great selection of books, that does what you want a bookshop to do, like, almost all the way. You don't get the, like, oh, I'm in a cozy bookshop thing.
Yeah.
But because this had a cafe and a record shop, it was a very cool spot. I will definitely go back there if I'm ever in Dartmouth again. I will super stop by because, really, the curation was insane.
Oh,
I felt
perfect.
Like every book I picked up was so interesting.
Yeah.
And then when I went to go pay, I was like, there was a girl working there and I was like, is this your bookshop? And she was like, no, I'm just, she was like, I'm just an employee. And I was like, not just an employee. but she was like, but the girl who owns the bookshop is like really cool. And I was like, nice. I can tell. Cause I wanted to meet her. I was like,
yeah.
The curation was so, so cool. So I ended up getting 2 books. I got 3 books there, but one of them is a present for Christmas. Oh. But yeah, I got 2 books there, one of which was The Dog of the South by Charles Portis.
So cool.
You guys might recognize that name because he wrote True Grit, which I read earlier this year and I won't shut up about because it's like one of my new favorite books of all time. After reading that book, I'm totally convinced I definitely want to read more of Charles Portis's stuff. I just hadn't looked into which one I would read next. And then I encountered this one at the shop and I was so excited. Like, I was so excited that it was Charles Portis. I was so excited that this cover matches my cover of True Grit. Mm-hmm. They clearly have been reissued. But then I start reading the back and it says, The Dog of the South is the story of Ray Midge tracking down his wife, Norma, who has run off with her first husband. Ray Midge is tracking them down by following credit card receipts, his own credit card that they stole. The trail leads from Arkansas down to Mexico and into Honduras. And it goes on from there. And I was like, it's me.
It's perfect.
It's Honduras. Like, I cannot emphasize enough how Honduras is never mentioned in anything.
Yeah.
And I was like, my man, Charles Portis,
gets it.
Wrote a book set in Honduras. Woo!
That's perfect. I also love that was at the store. Like, that feels like such a random thing to stock.
True Grit wasn't there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This is what I'm talking about.
The owner of the store must really like that book or something.
Oh, God. I mean, I don't know who this person is, but I love them. And the other book that I got there was like, oh, my, it's so cool. It's called Kafka Was the Rage by Anatole Breuillard.
Ooh.
So this, I don't know, it's a slim little cute looking book. And I was like, that looks neat. Start flipping through it. And I'm like, uh-oh. This is so cool. And on the back, it says, what Hemingway's A Movable Feast did for Paris in the 1920s, this charming memoir does for Greenwich Village in the late 40s.
Cool.
So this is a little memoir similar to A Movable Feast. It's like a very short, kind of very personal, just account of mm-hmm. what it was like in the book and writer scene in Ooh, New York
yeah.
right after the war. Like right after the war. And it start, like the start of it, I kind of wanted to scream in the shop. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever read. So it starts, I think there's a great nostalgia for life in New York City, especially in Greenwich Village in the period just after World War II. We were all so grateful to be there. It was like a reward for having fought the war. There was a sense of coming back to life, a terrific energy and curiosity, even a feeling of destiny arising out of the war that had just ended. The village, like New York City itself, had an immense beckoning sweetness. It was like Paris in the 20s, with the difference that it was our city. I mean,
that's really cool.
I'm feeling it. I'm there with him. I'm yeah. in New York and I love it. And I don't even care about New York that much.
Yeah.
But it's all so basically, Raylene, I started reading this last night because I was like, I just want to flip through a few pages. And yeah. I'm like almost halfway through it. And I wish we weren't recording so I could be reading this.
Nice. That's awesome.
It's so good. I will say, I then looked up the author because I was curious what he looked like. Mm-hmm. I was like, is there photographs of Anatole? And the first, all of the stuff that came up about him was that after he passed away, his daughter found out that he had been passing as white, even though both of his parents were Black Americans.
Oh, interesting.
And so she's written a book about him.
Whoa.
And his life. And so now I'm like, this is a memoirs all the way down.
That's so cool.
It's so interesting. So yeah, if anyone's read that, let me know if you enjoyed that book or if you thought it was good, because now I'm like, maybe I'll just keep reading memoirs by these family members. But yeah, really enjoying that. Really, really interesting.
Awesome.
So the next bookshop I went to was Strange Adventures Comics. You might remember this one.
Yeah.
I think I took you to this one, right? Yeah. It turns out they have a second location.
I was going
to
say, so, wait, what?
I know. They have Strange Adventures Comics in Halifax and Strange Adventures Comics in Dartmouth.
Okay.
The Dartmouth location is so much smaller, and it is truly a comic book store.
Okay.
They had one little shelf with graphic novels on it, but a lot of them kind of skewed superhero-y or like that kind of genre. So we were in there for only a little while because it was so crammed, and we were looking around and we found a little shelf, and I kind of like was able to in a minute or two just look at all the graphic novels and be like, I don't see anything that I like. So yeah, it definitely, if you are a comic books fan, this would be great to have, but I am not a comics book reader, so I don't know. It wasn't really a bookshop. It was a comic book shop.
Yeah, but at least you checked it out.
Yeah. So next up, we went to Tattletales.
Ooh.
Tattletales, they gave me a bookmark.
It's a huge bookmark.
It's massive, but I'm not going to lie to you. She's thought of something very clever. The woman who runs Tattletales, I got to chat with her. She was the clerk. She was so friendly. I told her about my project. She told me about her shop. I forget how long she said. It was 20-something years that she'd been running the shop. And this, she was like, I realized that people often want to gift people books.
Yeah.
They don't want to write in the book. So she designed this bookmark to have a lot of blank space. And the top of it says, a book note with compliments.
Oh,
and then there's
nice.
Space for you to write a message. I was like, that's a really nice idea, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So anyhow, Tattletales is a children's bookshop.
Oh.
It was huge. I really expected it to be small. I don't know why, but it was massive. And there was a large section of toys, as you can imagine, yeah. and like stuff like that, and puzzles and stuff like that. A lot of board books, a lot of picture books, a lot of chapter books, and there was a decent YA section. Like, it was okay. a pretty robust YA section. So if you have kids and you live in the Dartmouth area, I think that this would be such a great shop to visit.
Yeah.
I have a friend who just told me that she's pregnant, and so I wanted to get her I Want My Hat Back by yeah. John Clausen.
I was thinking about that. The moment you said children's bookstore, yep. I was like, John Clausen. John Clausen.
But they were sold out of it. And she said that they're always selling out of John Clausen books, which I'm yeah. happy to hear.
Rightfully so.
She had also just had one copy of The Skull, the book we read by him this yep. year. And she was like, I'm a little surprised that we're giving this book to children. I was like, isn't it great? She's it like, she, is. It's a little violent. I was like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we like that.
So I didn't get anything in the shop either, but I did enjoy my time there. Great. And then the next shop that we went to was called J.W. Dowell Books or Dual Books. I'm not okay. sure. This was such a strange experience. Okay. That's the only way I can put it. There was a lot of weird vibes going on in this shop.
Okay.
So it all over the door. It's okay. First of all, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. Mm. It's its own building, just kind of on the side of a highway. Oh, and weird. You're just like, okay, I guess this is it. And you go up to it, and all over the door, there's multiple signs that say, like, you still need to wear a mask here. If you want to come in, you need to wear a mask. And it's like, okay, that's fine. It was just a little aggressive, the way that the posters were saying it. But I didn't have a mask. Connor didn't have a mask. And we didn't have masks in the car. We, like, walked back and checked, and we were like, okay, we don't have masks. I was like, God damn it. Like, I really want to go to the shop. We drove all the way here, and it was kind of far. It was really far away from everything. Yeah. So we'd driven, like, an extra 15 minutes to get there. And I was like, okay, I feel like it's normal if a bookshop or any shop wants you to wear a mask, that they have masks, right? So I open the door and I peek my head in, and I want to be respectful. So I didn't even step in.
Yeah.
I just like leaned in a little bit and also kept the door open to like, in my head, I was like, this is airflow or something. And the guy that's working there, I think was J.W. Dewell, the guy who owns the shop. He's wearing a mask, of course. And I say, hi, we want to come in, but we don't have masks. Do you have any available? Mm-hmm. And he goes, you don't have masks? And I was like, no, I'm sorry, we don't have any. And he was like, you don't have any in your car? I was like, no, do you have them available? Yeah. Or do you have them for sale? Like, I'll buy a mask if you need me to buy a mask. And he was like, I only have a few left. But maybe I'll give you some, but you should buy a book. And I was like, I'm making a little deal with the devil here, because what if I don't find a book that I like? But that instantly added a lot of pressure to the whole experience.
Yeah, that's a stressful browsing experience.
I was like, now I have to find a book. So he gives us the masks. We put the masks in. Like, I tell you, this was just such a strange experience.
Yeah.
We go in, and he starts to kind of walk us around a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he was like, so this is the second largest used bookshop in Canada.
Whoa.
Instantly, my question is, what's the first one? What's number one? But I was like, I can't ask that. That's rude. So I was like, make a mental note. I'll check that later. Yeah. It turns out it's Russell Books in Montreal. So now we know. But it's cool that it's the second biggest one. And I didn't know that I was walking into this maze. And when I tell you that it was a maze, oh my God. I haven't been to a book or a bookshop that was that labyrinthian in a really long time. I felt lost at certain moments. I didn't know where I was anymore.
Didn't know if you're gonna make it out.
It didn't have heat. And I then talked to somebody later on, and they're like, yeah, they don't have heat. Like, in January, all of the people that work there are wearing, like, hats and mittens.
The bookstore that Julia and I used to work at was like that, too. Like, the heater, it was such a large building that even though there were heaters, it couldn't keep it warm, no matter what you did.
Okay, I think that must be what's happening, because it was, like, really cold. And it's only November. It's only the first week of November.
It's gonna
get cold
icy.
Already. But also, so many of the sections, the lights were off, that I literally at one point turned my phone flashlight on to figure out what section I was
That's scary. That's really scary.
It felt like I was in a movie or something. Like, yeah. It felt really, really crazy. There were some really wonderful details. The signs that said, like, poetry or literature, yeah. Those signs were, like, made out of wood, and they were, like, fake books that were peeking out from the shelves. So that was really cool, and it really just had so many books. There was so much to look at.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I did find some stuff to buy because I felt that I had made a social
contract.
He would
have, like, banned you from ever coming back.
I don't know what would have happened, but it was kind of scary. And so I read The Wheel of I bought The Wheel of Things by Molly Gillen, a biography of Lucy Maud Montgomery. So
amazing.
I was, like, very happy to add this to the to my Lucy Maud Montgomery section. Mm-hmm. And they had quite a few editions of this there, which was fun because I really picked the best one.
Nice.
I felt. So that was cool. I also got Our Village by Mary Mitford. This one was mainly just, like, buying a pretty object. Mm. Like, I see this more as, this has what we're talking about. No sprayed edges on the bottom, foredge, but yes, on the top
and
edge.
And it's blue. That's cool.
That's cool. Now we know why that exists.
That's awesome.
Yeah, this was mainly just, like, buying a pretty object. I feel like it's vignettes of this woman who was born in a small English village in 1787. She died in 1855. But she did these vignettes, these little glimpses into what living in an English village was like at the time.
Cool.
And I just thought that sounded really lovely. So I don't think I'll ever read this cover to cover, but it would be something fun to dip into, and I just thought it was really a beautiful book.
It is, yeah.
And then the third book I bought, again, I think that I was just feeling pressure.
You're just like, grab something, grab anything.
Because I'm like, what is this? What did I buy? But I did buy it. I bought Constance Fenimore Wilson, Portrait of a Lady Novelist by Anne Boyd Rue. So this is a biography of this author, Constance Fenimore Wilson, who I've never heard of. Mm-hmm. And kind of on the first page of the biography, the author is like, this is a biography about a woman no one's ever heard of. At the time, she was a best-selling novelist. Everybody knew about her. But she's just one of those authors that this always happens, that just hasn't stood the test of time for whatever reason. She's fallen out of favor. And yeah, so she wrote a whole biography about her life and about her writing and about why her writing was interesting and stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it sounded great. And on the back, it's, like, blurbed by the woman who wrote the biography of Georgia O'Keeffe and the woman who wrote this other biography. And so, like, a lot of biography people seem to think this is great. And I was like, surely that's a good sign.
Yeah.
If the biography community is
a community that you're hoping to join.
Yeah, my future community. So I got kind of excited and picked this one up as well. So, listen, if you have a mask, you should go to the shop. If you don't, I don't know if you should. But I felt like it was such an experience. I would definitely, like, if I was on a date with someone, which will never happen again probably, but if I was on a date with someone, I might go to this shop because there's so much to see and you could be wandering around there forever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it's many sections and nooks and crannies and, like, weird little niche sections and stuff. So there was a lot to do and see.
That's awesome.
But I don't know if I will make the trek out there again because it is kind of in the middle of nowhere. The books were not that marked down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when you go to a used bookshop and the books are really cheap, you're like, okay, this is actually really worth it. Mm-hmm. They were cheaper because they're used, but they weren't, like, really cheap. So it was just a little like,
you could go to a different used bookstore.
I could go to closer. Yeah, that's closer. But I'm glad that I went for the experience because
absolutely.
It really was an experience. And then the final bookshop that I went to was the Dartmouth Book Exchange.
Ooh.
This was a really cool book. Great name, right?
Yeah.
Really good name. This was a really lovely bookshop. Again, I got to meet the bookshop owner because she was the clerk that was there. And I bought a book there, but it's for my brother, so I can't talk about it because he edits this podcast. Yep. And so it's for Christmas. And I got a little bag of tea because they sold, like, literary tea. So I got Wuthering Heights s'mores tea. And I don't know what s'mores have to do with Wuthering Heights, but it sounded really good.
Man,
so I got some tea. This was one of those used bookshops that like really focuses on mass market paperbacks, like a lot of romance, a lot of crime. They had a lot of Western stuff like that. So I just didn't happen to find anything that spoke to me, but there was a classic section that was cool. There was interesting stuff. And there's also an Oprah's picks section, which was really quite interesting, actually.
I've been to bookstores that have that, and it's like, there are a lot of books that fit into that.
Truly, it's kind of fascinating. So those were the five bookshops that I went to and the books that I got at the shops.
Amazing. So do you know how many you have left to go to now? Like, have you tallied it up?
Okay, this is really controversial. The other day, I was going to go to some shops and I was looking up where they are and I realized one of them had closed years ago. And I was like, you know what? This is kind of goes with what I've been thinking. I don't think the list that I've been relying on is that reliable.
Right.
So I did some digging and I spent like an hour checking every single shop on the list. And then like Google Mapsing shops and stuff. And what happened was I discovered that a lot of the shops on my, not a lot, but a few of the shops on my original list were fully closed, permanently closed. But also there's been new shops that have come up in the last few years. And so my original list was 34 bookshops long. My new list is 42 bookshops long. And I'm like, well, surely it's not fair that I have to visit all 42.
because it was less.
Because I was signing up to a different challenge, like a different amount of bookshop challenge. And some of these are like, in the, like far away. So I'm like, oh no. So I have now visited 19 of 42, which is a lot. But it's like, that's not even half because I've added so many to the list. Of the original 34, I visited 56%. So I'm over half.
But, I mean, I think if you, in the end, are able to visit, say, like 75% of the ones that are still in existence, I think that's very solid. Like, I think
that does feel like a big accomplishment.
I feel like that is completing the goal, even though it's technically not.
I also have several, I do have several plans. Like, there's a couple, there's four more in Halifax. I'm like, how many are there? So I'm like, those I'll definitely hit up. I have a reason to go to some of these different towns and I'm going to like mash it up with visiting shops. Nice. So I'm not giving hope, not giving up hope on the list yet. I'm enjoying the hecticness of it all. I'm just going to keep plowing forward and seeing what happens and maybe just every day in December go
to a new shop. And I mean, that's really cool because like just if we're just talking about like our goals for the year in general, like I still have goals that I have not reached and I might not reach, but we'll see.
We gotta keep believing.
Yeah,
what's funny too is like this is actually quite an expensive goal. Gas is so expensive now.
Yes,
and going to all of these shops, I'm like, it's I have definitely given up. Like originally I had thought I want to buy a book at every shop.
Yeah, that doesn't always
work. And like one of the first shops I went to, I just didn't find anything that I like, and I was like, yeah, actually that's super true. I don't need to feel pressure to buy books.
Yeah,
like that's not
the goal is to go to the stores, not to keep them alive.
Go to the stores and yeah exactly. Okay, I do have two more books to haul.
Okay.
And they just came in the mail this week. So this first one, oh my God, it's so cool. It's Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville-West Love Letters. This is published by Vintage Classics. It's a like a Vintage Classics edition. Oh my God. It's so cool. I did read a bit of it yesterday when we were on our Patreon live show. I only made it to like page 12 or something. It's kind of small font. But anyhow, it's fantastic. These are letters spanning 20 years. It's 20 years between these two authors, Virginia Woolf, who I obviously know a lot of, like I've heard a lot about. But Vita Sackville-West, I'm going to be honest, I don't know anything about her.
Yeah, me either.
So I'll be learning as I go along, I'm sure. But it's their correspondence, but also their diary entries.
Oh.
And also a little spattering of just historical facts. So basically, like, It starts with, it starts with an introduction, which I skipped because as per normal introductions, it started spoiling stuff.
Get out of here.
But yeah, it starts with a diary entry from Virginia Woolf in 1922. She talks about going to a party and meeting these people, meeting Vita Sackville West and her husband and stuff. And she gives, she says, the aristocratic manner, something like an actress's, no false shyness or modesty, makes me feel virgin, shy, and schoolgirlish, yet after dinner I rapped out opinions. She is a grenadier, hard, handsome, manly, inclined to double chin. I don't exactly know what that means, but there
I love
we go.
It, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, I liked it. So she talks about meeting Vita Sackville West for the first time, and then she writes, and then we have a letter from Vita Sackville West to her husband.
Oh.
And she says, I just met Virginia Woolf. She was incredible. I love her. I'm obsessed. She's the coolest person I've ever met. I want to be your friend. And then it goes back, and then a letter from Virginia to Vita Sackville, and she's like, it was nice meeting you. But you can really tell that Virginia does not like Vita as much as Vita likes Virginia.
Yeah.
Also, at the time, and it's in one of the very early diary entries, Virginia's diary says, we had a surprise visit from the Nicholsons. And so, yeah, her last name, I guess, is Nicholson. I don't know. I'm a little confused. But she's a pronounced sapphist. And May thinks Ethel Sands have an eye on me, old though I am. So basically, they're going to have a love story. They have like this flirtation, this intense flirtation and romance that happens over their lives. I'm snooping. I'm behind the scenes where I shouldn't be, reading their letters.
Yeah, that sounds so juicy and like a fun
read. It's so juicy.
Yeah.
Okay, the other one that I have is Cheap Old Houses by Elizabeth and Ethan Finkelstein. It says HGTV hosts and founders of Cheap Old Houses.
Oh.
So, also, if you see a little Kleenex poking out, it's because I lent this book to my mom and she got halfway through it and put a Kleenex in it.
Oh, so, boy.
A new Kleenex, I will add. We've all done it. But yeah, so this is a beautiful book.
Oh wow.
It's signed. They signed it.
Whoa.
It's such a stunning book, and it's looking at all these different case studies of people who have bought cheap old houses. Just like
perfect
me,
for
really.
You.
and then restored them and brought them back to life and really put the time and energy into restoring them back to their former glory. It's such a beautiful book, and what they do is such a beautiful project. Like, I follow them on Instagram, and they reached out and they were like, could we send you the book? And I was like, I would be honored for you to send me that book. That would be really, really cool. My mom was like, you've got to be in the book. I was like, maybe in 7 years when I finally finish this thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Please.
That's cute.
But yeah, so I also got that one.
Nice.
Wow.
Big journey.
It was a big journey, really. And it was such a long weekend. It was just like that Saturday, it was the longest Saturday of my entire life. Because after that, we had dinner with a friend and then went out with them. Me and Connor on Sunday, we were like, what happened? What happened yesterday? And then the time changed and we were like, I don't know.
It's bamboozling for sure.
All right, let's talk about what we read.
Yeah.
What did you read?
Okay, well, a few weeks ago when we last did a reading update, I was reading this book and I've now finished it, and that is The Between by Tananarive Due. Tananarive Due was born in Tallahassee, Florida in 1966. In 2002, she won the American Book Award for her novel The Living Blood, which is the second book in her African Immortals series. She is also known as a film historian with expertise in black horror and currently teaches a course at UCLA called The Sunken Place, Racism, Survival, and the Black Horror Aesthetic, which focuses on Jordan Peele's debut film, Get Out. This book, I didn't love it, unfortunately, but I'll kind of briefly walk you through why. And I feel like it's the type of book that upon a reread, I would like it more because basically it's about this man who is, I don't know how old he is, but like he's married, has a couple of children. And when he was a child, though, he almost drowned and his grandma saved him. And ever since then, he's kind of been like haunted by these strange dreams. And So there's a lot of like dream sequences in the book, which isn't my favorite thing. But as the book progresses, he starts to learn what they mean and why they're happening. And once you understand what they mean and why they're happening, it really like makes them more interesting. They're not just dreams. Like there's so much more going on kind of under the surface. And so I feel like if I were to reread this book, I would appreciate the dream sequences more. Whereas, you know, I don't like them because I feel like most of the time you're reading about a dream and it's like, this isn't real. This has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
It's pointless. But in this book, they're not pointless. So I think I'd be able to appreciate them more upon a reread. And I think if you're going to check out this book, which I do think is very much worth checking out, it's kind of like a modern classic in the horror genre, I would say. It came out in 1995, I think. And yeah, like it's definitely worth reading, and just keep an open mind if you're not into dream sequences, because it is meaningful. But there's also a lot of other stuff going on in the book, like the main character and his wife are kind of going through some marital issues. So it's got kind of like a family drama thing going on, but it's also supernatural horror, kind of funky stuff. So yeah, I didn't love it, but it is a good book. Like it's one of those books where I'm like, I know that this is worth reading. And it's, you know, it's one of those books that has stuck around for a reason. But after that, I started, I can't remember if I talked about this before, but I read Out by Natsuo Kirino, which is a mashed potato book of mine. Natsuo Kirino is the pen name of Mariko Hashioka, who was born in Kanazawa, Japan in 1951. She started her writing career in 1984 when she started writing romance novels. This was not a popular genre in Japan, and she was more passionate about crime fiction and the psychology of crimes, so she switched her focus to the mystery genre in the early 90s. She has written over 20 novels, with only a handful of them being translated into the English language. This book took over a lot of my October, actually, which is why, like, it's been 2 weeks since we last chatted, but like this is all I've really been reading.
I think you talked about it.
I must have. Like, I feel like I talked about the beginning because I knew I said that I was going to love it or something.
Maybe it was in the end of the year book tag. Maybe you mentioned that.
It might have been that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, this is one that I have been meaning to read for years, and I've put it on my October TBR, I want to say, for at least the past like 3 years or so. Like, I keep wanting to read it and then not picking it up. It is a little bit long. It's like 540 pages long in the edition that I have. So that could be part of it. That was kind of scaring me. But also, I was just so excited to read it because I've heard so many good things about it. And Julia actually read it a few months ago, and she was like, you've got to read this book. So I've had that in the back of my mind, and I just finally decided to pick it up. And it was really good. Like, I definitely enjoyed it. So it's about four women who all work together at this like boxed lunch factory. They work the night shift, so they're there from midnight until 5:30 in the morning. And they all kind of like, they're sort of friends, but they're not super close or anything like that. But they, you know, they work together in this kind of hard environment. And so they've definitely bonded in certain ways. And the story really kicks off when one of the women shows up to work and she has a huge bruise on her stomach. Like, they kind of see her stomach and are like, oh my God, what happened to you? And they find out that her husband like kind of attacked her. And so that was, you know, a dark moment at the beginning. But then she kills her husband after that too. Okay. She just is finally like, I'm fed up with this. I can't take it anymore. And she kills him. And then the other women kind of realize that something is wrong, and they kind of get it out of her somehow. And they're like, we'll help you out. We'll get rid of the body. Don't even worry about it. And so it starts this whole kind of dark path of like questions of like, what are you willing to do to like help your friends? What are you willing to do to protect yourself? Like, what will you do in if you're put in a bad situation, what are you willing to do to survive, kind of? And so it asks a lot of interesting questions, and it's definitely a gruesome book. There's a lot of kind of, I wouldn't even call it body horror, but lots of like body stuff going on, because it's very in-depth about all that. Like, it doesn't shy away from any of the gross details. So that's a warning for anybody who's not into that. There's also sexual assault scenes. So like, stay away from it if you can't take that. But it was so, so good though. Like, it was, it was kind of slow at times. Like, I found it to have kind of an up and down pace. But what I also found really interesting is that early on in the book, you're introduced to this totally random character. There's this man that like runs a casino, and he's kind of spooky, but you don't know what he has to do with anything. And then you don't see him for like 200 pages. And so you're like, what did that guy have to do with anything? And it all kind of starts to weave together as the story progresses, and it all comes together in a really cool way. But yeah, overall, really, really enjoyed it. I will say the last like 15 pages or so kind of were like, what the hell just happened? Why did that happen? Like it almost, I wouldn't say it ruined the book, but it did kind of like take away from it in a certain way, like without That's spoiling anything. Yeah, like it just took a weird turn that felt not like how the characters should be doing things. Like, I don't know. It just felt weird. So I just wanted to put that out there because it is kind of like, okay. Huh? What? But overall, really good. Really glad I finally read it. And I have another book by her that I want to read on my shelf. So I don't know if I'll check it out soon. But
did it have a satisfying ending?
Kind of. Like, it comes to a satisfying place, but then it just has, like, a weird flavor to it. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, it just is tinged with, like, but why did it have to go in that direction? Like, it's satisfying and then it's not. It's kind of like, it's both at the same time. But, yeah.
That's fascinating, because that makes me feel like, I don't know. Authors have so much responsibility, right? You spend, 30 hours reading that book or whatever? Like, you spend so much time with it. If it ends poorly, I guess I'm imagining, like, the scene in Silver Linings Playbook where he's, like, so pissed at the end of Farewell to Arms that he throws the book out the window. Like, it's kind of reasonable in some way. I mean, that wasn't reasonable, but, like, it's sort of understandable because you spend so much time. You are giving your attention and your brain to the author and saying, like, I'm respecting these characters so much that I am invested in them. Yeah. Like, I'm investing in them with you. And so if you let me down at the end, that's kind of brutal.
Yeah.
Ooh, fascinating. Yeah.
I'll tell you after what happens. I don't want to spoil it.
When did that book come out?
1997, I think.
Okay, cool. Neat.
Yeah, it's another fun thing about, like, both of these books that are, like, set in the 90s. So, like, you don't really have cell phones going on and stuff. Yeah, 1997. Right. So, and same with, like, Intensity, the book that I'm reading now, which I'll talk about in a bit. It's also came out in the 90s. So it's, like, I kind of like that. It has a totally different vibe from reading modern books because it's, like, okay, yeah, this is a horrific situation and we don't even have cell phones, so we can't even, like, text each other or whatever.
Yikes. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. All right. Well, I also read two books. The first one was Serious Concerns by Wendy Cope. Wendy Cope is a British poet. She attended Oxford College and was a primary school teacher for 14 years, and then became a full-time writer and critic for different magazines and newspapers, and was even a judge for the Man Booker Prize in 2007. All of her main poetry collections have been published by Faber and Faber. Serious Concerns was published in 1992. For some reason, ended up not including into the fact in her little bio that she also has the OBE, the Order of the British Empire. As you know, I really want the Order of Nova Scotia. I agree with Nova Scotia that I don't deserve it yet, but I am putting it out there. This was really cool. She is, like, a best-selling author, has won so many awards. Like, she's very critically acclaimed. And this was I would say definitely a modern classic. This was published in 92. So it's still pretty recent, but it's definitely one of the ones that from the 90s is called out more. I have a little stamp in it because I bought this book in Portugal, in one of the bookshops in Portugal that I went to. This was very enjoyable. As you remember, I read The Orange out loud.
Okay, I was going to ask about that. I was like, is this that book?
Yes, and I remember you really liked that one. I loved it. And she just had all of her poems are really, really fun. They rhyme, or they're silly, or they're cute, but not in like a diminutive way, but just like in a, that was fun kind of a way. I'm trying to find one that I would read out as well, but I've highlighted a couple of different ones. Oh, okay, let's see this one. Page 78, it's called Favorite. When they ask me, who's your favorite poet? I better not mention you, though you certainly are my favorite poet, and I like your poems too.
Aww. That is cute. I like that.
That's really, really cute. So I didn't love it. Like, this is not for me personally. And that's the thing about poetry, just like music. It's just like, I don't know. You either connect with, you vibe with it, or you don't. Yeah. You just, like, what can you say, right? But I really, really, I enjoyed it a lot. And it was funny. I chuckled quite a few times. She is like, and I feel like that's hard to do in poetry without it feeling stupid.
Yeah.
But she made me laugh quite a few times. I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it. I would definitely read another collection by Wendy Cope, but I'm not like racing out to read another one.
Yeah.
And then the other book I read, I'm excited to tell you about this one, is Letters to His Neighbor by Marcel Proust, translated by Lydia Davis. Marcel Proust was born in 1871 in Paris, the city where he spent most of his life. He was a novelist, critic, and essayist who is most well known for his novel In Seven Parts, In Search of Lost Time. Proust spent his life with chronic illness, especially afflicted by asthma, and so spent much of his life indoors working from bed. He died of pneumonia and other lung complications in 1922, but is considered one of the most important authors of our time. Lydia Davis is a writer and translator from Massachusetts. She has translated several classic novels from French, such as Swan's Way by Marcel Proust and Madame Bovary by Gustave Flaubert, both of which were awarded the French-American Foundation Translation Prize. Lydia Davis recently made headlines for announcing that her newest book, published October 2023, would not be available on Amazon.
Hmm.
So when I was researching Lydia Davis to write her info bit, they were all of these recent articles from the last few months about how her newest book, that just came out last month, she's refusing to sell it on Amazon.
Wow.
She's boycotting Amazon, which is really, really interesting. And so I recommend looking into that because it's fascinating. This... I loved. Yay. I really enjoyed. Again, though, I will say this was not a 5 out of 5. This was like a 4.5.
Oh, yeah.
And a large part of that was just like the overall experience that I had with it was really, really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
I bought this because of Lena. So if you recall, when Lena was here, she pointed out 84 Charing Cross Road on my shelves. And she was like, have you read that? And I said, not yet. And she said, you must read it. She really emphasized it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh, I'll bring it up to my room. And I did. And I started flipping through it. And I just totally fell for it. Fell into it. Loved it.
Yeah.
10 out of 10. Then I messaged her and I'm like, Lena, I need more books like this. I can't find them online. Like, I keep finding novels that are like this, but I want like nonfiction, like actual real letters. And she recommended me two books, this one The Love Letters Between Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville West. So this one came in the mail a couple of days before the Virginia Woolf one. I ordered them at the same time, but this one came first. And I just started flipping through it. And next thing I knew, I was like halfway through it. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to read this. And I also made a reading vlog all about reading this. I read it in 2 days and I just like did a big vlog for the patrons. So if you want to watch the vlog, that is linked. Our Patreon is always linked in the show notes. But this was great. Guess who published it? Guess who published it?
New Directions or Faber and Faber.
Yep. New Directions. My fave buddies. Love those guys. Love them so much. Really beautiful book as well. Like the end papers are so high quality and it's like cloth bound. Like, it's just lovely.
Yeah.
So the actual book itself is beautiful. And there's photographs of the actual letters themselves in the book. And there's pictures of him and his neighbor that he's writing to. So it's 26 letters that he sent his neighbor. And so this is the main flaw in the book.
Yeah.
It is not a back and forth. It is only his letters to her.
Right.
And so it's a little bit of a letdown, like story-wise,
mm-hmm.
because you are missing half of the story.
Right.
And in multiple of his letters, Raylene, he says... That letter was stunning. That brought me back to life. And I have never read a letter so good.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, damn, I would have liked to read it too.
Nice. Yeah.
It was still really interesting. And it's really funny because I don't know anything about Proust. Like, he's one of these authors who's just like really famous and really, really prestigious. But his books are very like intimidating. And so you don't read them unless you have to kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't read anything by him. I don't really know very much about him at all. And it's funny that this is where I've started with his writing.
So random.
He's a really great writer, of course. And like so many of the passages were really cool. I really enjoyed the translation by Lydia Davis. It felt so wonderful and smooth. And like I wasn't thinking about Lydia Davis while I was reading it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like there was someone between me and Marcel. But the fact that it wasn't a correspondence really eliminated it. And also, like, there wasn't that much of a plot. Like, yeah. 84 Charing Cross Road has a real plot, even mm-hmm. though it's, like, real life. It just has, like, a story is kind of built into it. But here, he's mainly just writing, like, kind of weird little updates. And the main topic is just asking for them to not make noise because he's very sick. And so he's always in bed. And he's like, I just had a really bad attack. Do you think that you could not do noise tomorrow in the morning, hopefully above my bedroom, you could avoid? Yeah. Because and it's just like a lot of like asking for the apartment to be quiet. So this definitely was an enjoyable read. I'm glad I read it. And I'm glad that I'm now on this weird little letters track.
Yeah.
I'm reading letters.
Have you discovered any other books that you've bought or were thinking of buying?
Other than the love letters, the Virginia Woolf, not yet.
Okay.
I do, but I did get Letters to a Young Poet. Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah. That's the one I hear about Rilke. The most.
So I also have that one. So I do have a couple on the docket, but yeah, this is a very interesting category. Actually, I lie. I did buy one other one that's coming from England. Like, I had to find a used copy, blah, blah, blah. But it's a bind up of Orwell's letters, but it's kind of different because it's not like two people, it's not
it's
a correspondence,
just a bunch of random letters.
It's just a bunch of his letters that we've collected over, but I still thought that seemed cool. But yeah, I'm interested to learn more about this genre. Letters,
very nice.
All right, well, everyone, we've come to the end of this big catch-up episode.
We didn't talk about what we're reading.
You're right. Take it back. We're not at the end at all, everyone. Done. We're still going. Raylene, what the hell are you reading?
Okay, I'll make it quick because we have been here a long time. But I'll start by talking about the book I already kind of teased, which is Intensity by Dean Koontz. So this one, I was kind of hoping to finish it yesterday, but I still have a little bit to go. It didn't quite happen, but it is the type of book that you can just sit down and kind of blast through because, well, let me just tell you what it's about. So the main character is this young woman named China Shepherd. She's just going to hang out with her friend and her parents at their large estate in the Napa Valley. Like, they're just going to go hang out for the weekend, have a nice time, and then go back to college or whatever. And the two of them are both psychology students. They're both working on getting their master's in psychology. So they're two smart women. And but the unfortunate thing is there's this madman killer guy who, from the very beginning of the book, he has already decided once that girl shows up to hang out with her parents, like, that night I'm just gonna kill all of them. Like, that's his goal, is to break in and murder everyone in the house. And but the thing is, he doesn't know that China is there too. He does not know that she was coming with Laura, and so she's kind of an unknown factor, and that is where the plot lies. So she is
fun.
She is, it is so fun. Like, it's really fast-paced, dark, twisted, and China is a great main character because she is, like, a survivor. Like, she's been through a lot from her childhood, was, like, abusive and crazy, and so she's very smart, and, like, she thinks about everything she does, and she, like, is always thinking, like, 10 steps ahead, like, if I do this, this might happen, if I do this, this might happen. So she's, it's really fun to be in her head because she's not, like, a dumb main character. She's not, like, the typical type of, like, horror main character, not main character, usually the main characters are smart, but you know what I mean, like, in horror a lot of times people are just, like, making bad decisions and it ends poorly for them. But with this one, she's really, really thinking ahead, and she basically, the main driving force behind the plot is that she finds out who he's probably going to kill next, and she takes it upon herself to try and save that person. And so she goes on this kind of crazy journey with him, and it's just crazy. Like, literally so much is happening. Every single page, there's, like, not a moment of dullness.
So you're saying intensity is very intense.
It's very, very intense. Like, it really, really is. And then I'm also listening to an audiobook right now for Fairy Tale by Stephen King. Because I realized, I mean, I still have to read 3 fantasy books by the end of the year if I'm going to complete my goal. So this one just happened to come in. It is, like, a 24-hour long audiobook, and I'm about 4 hours in. So I've got a long ways to go. And so far, it's okay. I would say it's just fine. The main character is this 17-year-old boy who kind of saves his, this, like, old elderly man's, he doesn't, like, save his life, but he helps him out. Basically, the old man falls off a ladder, and this guy comes across him and is like, hey, I'll call you an ambulance. And then people are like, wow, a local hero. But anyway, so that's, and now he's just kind of taking care of the old man, and there's, like, something something going on, but I don't know what it is yet. And the fact that it's called Fairy Tale makes me think maybe this old man is, I don't know, from another world or something, but I have no idea what the book is actually about. So it's interesting to discover, but yeah, it's just cool. Fun so far. We'll see where it goes.
Nice. All right, I am reading Kafka Was the Rage, which I hauled today.
Yeah.
I am about halfway through it, really enjoying it, underlining a lot with my pencil.
Very good.
So yeah, we'll see where I get. I feel like I'm in the middle of like six different things, honestly.
Yeah.
Because the last week has been so busy that I'm not really sure what I'm in the middle of. So
yeah.
Basically, we'll find out together whenever we do our next
reading
update.
We'll touch base next time.
I'll tell you where I'm at.
Very good.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Reminder again, our bookmark subscription is currently open. Subscribe. It's a lot of fun. And you can also always just subscribe for the first one and then see if you like it and stay on, or be like, oh, okay, I'm glad I tried it. But you can always cancel. So
yeah,
maybe just give it a shot. Why not? As they say. All right. We'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.